You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
This is probably the most difficult hour that I have done in radio in the almost 10 years that I have been on RBN. Melanie, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much.
And I see you. I don't have visual. I just have audio. So I'm seeing your face, and you look happy. And I'm happy that you're with us. Today, we're going to be talking about our daughters. And it's going to be very difficult. This is the 1 year anniversary of my daughter's death. And I didn't realize until just recently that Monday, August 3rd, was the 1 year anniversary for your daughter's death.
Yes, yes.
And I do believe that you and I were meant to talk to each other.
Absolutely.
As difficult as it will be, and I don't believe in coincidences. I believe that we were supposed to talk, and I also, in a video or in a, it was a video that I'm going to have our board operator or producer play, if that's okay with you. I don't want to. I think you know which video I'm talking about. It's about a 2.5 minute video. And you mentioned that you did not anticipate that you would see your daughter Caitlin again. And, I think you will. And, I know you will.
Thank you.
I do believe that. And the other thing that I believe is that our daughters are probably listening.
Absolutely.
To this program. They might even be together and prodding us on and giving us strength. But your situation with Caitlin was so different than mine. We anticipated my daughter's death. She had suffered from cancer for quite some time.
I'm so sorry.
She outlasted the predictions or the of her doctors, and so she went when she decided to go. She transitioned, and I think sometimes we think, oh, she died. I say transitioned because I believe that they are still in a different environment, but they're not somewhere in outer space. They are with us. We just cannot see them.
Absolutely.
But they are with us.
Absolutely.
And my daughter, she always knew when she was a child, she always knew where everything was in the house. I don't know how she knew, but she knew where everything was. And there have been times, recently, well, since she passed, since she transitioned, that I have said, okay, Rebecca, I really need to know where this is. And within seconds, it'll come to me where something that I have misplaced is. I have her picture right outside my bedroom door. She's the last image that I see before I go to bed and the first image that I see when I wake up. And I talk to her. I tell her good night. I tell her that I love her, and I tell her good morning. And I know that she hears me. And when you speak with your daughter, Caitlin, I know that she hears you also. I really believe that.
I believe that as well. I feel her presence all the time. I do talk to her as well, and it's, yeah, it's, and that's the way I absolutely feel, that she's not in the physical, but I mean, she's still here with me, and she reminds me of that all the time.
And that is so wonderful. And of course we miss them. Oh my gosh. It's, parents aren't supposed to lose their children. It should be the other way around. And I think it's important too that we have people around us, that are uplifting, that can offer us the empathy and the sympathy that we need. And certainly you have people around you that can offer you that.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Oh yes, I have, gosh, I have the best support system around me. My parents live next door to me, so I mean, it doesn't get much better than that. So they've been amazing. I mean, my parents, my friends, the outpouring of love and support. I mean, that and my faith is what truly gets me by. I mean, it's amazing. I don't know what I would do without the support system.
Absolutely. And I have a great support system. My son, who was very close. They were best friends growing up. They were just best friends. And in fact, he arrived yesterday. My children are the most important. The best thing I've ever done in my life was to have two wonderful children. That's the best thing that I've ever done. It's the most wonderful experience I've ever had, is having children and enjoying time with them, doing all the activities that we did together. And those are the things too that I think are important for us to remember. Correct?
Absolutely. Oh gosh, yes. I mean, Caitlin has her sister who actually turned 13. Just days after Caitlin transitioned, and she'll be 14 on the 15th of this month. And like you said, your son was best friends with your daughter. I mean, Caitlin and Madison, my other daughter, I mean, we're so close. They were 8.5 years apart, but Caitlin was that big sister that just took Madison under her wing and, you know, just took up for her, had her back. I mean, they were just, you know, so close. And especially once Caitlin got older, I mean, it just was amazing, the bond that they had. I mean, it was, they had quite the bond.
That is wonderful. That is wonderful. Now, your daughter was married, and this is where it gets very difficult for you, I'm sure. It's just, she was married, and she had an 8-month-old child. And she was 4 months pregnant.
Yes.
And she was married to Guajardo, a person by the name of Guajardo.
Mm-hmm.
And can we play the little 2.5 minute? Is that going to be okay?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So we will have our producer play that, so that people can get an understanding of what exactly happened.
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, you're looking at the best. Day and day, you're looking at.
Okay, we'll be there here.
No problem.
All right, let's talk about this man right here behind me. Wow, what a disturbing story this is. Now out on bond after allegedly abusing his pregnant wife, only to be charged days later with her murder. Now her family and the Pasadena police chief says, well, he should have never been let out of jail to begin with. ABC 13 reporter Marla Carter, live now at that jailhouse. Marla?
That's right. Just days before that murder, Alex Guajardo allegedly punched his wife in the face and killed their cat. He was charged and a protective order was issued. Still, he got out on bond.
I do blame the system that my daughter's dead, and I never will see her again.
Caitlin Guajardo's mother says her daughter would be alive today if her alleged killer had been kept behind bars. A week ago today, Alex Guajardo allegedly punched his wife in the face. Then days later, she found their cat dead. He was charged. The DA's office asked for a high bond, but instead, the judge let him out on what's called a PR bond. Basically, you don't have to post any money to get out of jail. Just your word that you'll appear later. With that, he was out, and days later, his wife was stabbed 20 times. He's accused of killing her and their unborn child.
I just would want to tell that judge that he is the reason why my daughter is dead and her unborn child. And if he had just kept him in jail, she would still be alive.
Now, Harris County County Judge Alina Hidalgo issued a statement late today saying, in part, this is a tragic, deeply disturbing murder, and my heart goes out to the victim and her family. As the new rules require for those charged with family violence, Mr. Guajardo was seen by a judge when he was initially arrested, and that judge made the determination to release him on bond. This is precisely the process that we would have undergone prior to the new rules being implemented as well. But still, of course, that is not enough for the family. We'll hear more from the victim's family. We'll also hear from the Pasadena police chief, who has some stern words as well about this failed reform. That's all coming up tonight at 6:30. Reporting live from downtown Houston, Marla Carter, ABC 13 Eyewitness News.
That is just such a miscarriage of common good sense. And I have spoken with people, in fact, somebody from Texas that has talked about this policy of letting people go when they should be locked up. And apparently they're letting a lot of people out of prison with this COVID issue. But this happened before, and he never should have been released. He should have remained where he was. I'm so sorry.
Thank you so much. It's absolutely horrific. I mean, I didn't even know what a PR bond was before this happened. I mean, when this happened, I mean, after the initial shock, you know, I mean, I just was thinking, like, how in the world did he get out? Like, who bonded him out? I just was, you know, blaming everyone, thinking someone bonded him out. And then I saw, you know, the Pasadena police chief, I mean, Brugger, you know, go and do his conference on TV about the PR bond. And that's when I realized that they just let him out. And I just, it just was the most angering, most confusing thing that I will never understand. I mean, it's like as if the judge just signed off on something, like, you know, nonchalantly. I felt like it was just like another thing to them. And this is, I mean, it's like they didn't look at his criminal history. They didn't look at, you know, the safety of, you know, my daughter. They didn't look at, you know, the victim, you know, in all this. And I just felt like she finally stood up to him. She finally was brave enough to stand up to him and have him arrested for the abuse, only to be based, you know, for him to be let out before the ink was dry. It's just, there was no accountability whatsoever. It's horrific, and it's happening, like you said, it happens every day. I mean, we're seeing cases like, you know, sadly like this, and I mean, all the time. I mean, there is just, it's like, you know, I feel so sorry. These policemen, you know, are arresting these criminals, and
right.
For what? They're just letting them spread. They're just like slapping them on the wrist and letting them out to go do more crimes and like my, sadly, you know, tragically murder people like my daughter. It's just, it's horrific.
That is amazing. Have you talked with the judge? Have you talked to anybody about how you feel or about this situation?
Yes, absolutely. I'm working with, a lot of, you know, police organizations, a lawyer, Ken Good, Mario Garza, who's a part of the Bondsman-like Association, and he's gotten me in touch with a lot of people. We're trying to get a bill passed where it would hold, you know, these criminals accountable. It's going to be called Caitlin's Law, And, you know, it will require the judges and magistrates to look at their criminal history and not give out multiple PR bonds. Like, if you're already out on a PR bond, like Alex was, they shouldn't be giving another PR bond. If they go and commit more crimes when they're already on a PR bond, they need to be locked up and kept in jail. I mean, these are repetitive criminals and they're not being held accountable. So Caitlin's law would make judges and magistrates, you know, look at these things and keep these criminals behind bars where they belong. I hope, you know, that we're reaching as many people as we can, you know, because it's like, I don't understand how bad it has to get. I mean, this happened and I see all these, like, you know, elected officials that aren't taking this seriously and with the system. And I mean, how bad does it get? I mean, is it going to, you know, if this happened to one of their children, like, you know,
right.
I that's kind of what I think. I'm like, I mean, at what point do you put a stop to it? I mean, people are getting murdered and they're not getting it. And so, yes, I've gotten to a lot of people. I'm doing as many interviews as I can. And we're going to, you know, present, Caitlin's law to the legislature and pray to God that it does get passed.
And I would imagine that this is very therapeutic for you to know that you are doing something that you couldn't prevent your own daughter's murder. It was totally out of your hands. There was nothing that you could possibly do, but because of your actions, And your heart, you are doing something that's therapeutic for you as well as for Caitlin, to have Caitlin's law. And it is amazing to me that they would let him out. Now, was he abusive initially or not?
They were only together roughly about a year and a half. I mean, I've quite done the math, but they weren't together very long. And we saw, from the beginning, we saw red flags. You know, the control, the jealousy, just the, you know, kind of like the narcissism. You know, I mean, in my 43 years, I mean, I've seen and experienced, you know, abuse myself. So, I knew exactly what to look for, and we, you know, warned her early on, you know, what we saw. And before the physical abuse started, we saw, like, you know, like I said, the control and the jealousy. And it wasn't until the February, before the August that she was murdered, is that February that she actually, she was beat up, like, to a pulp, where she could see her eyes. I mean, she, I was at work, and she actually called me and told me that she was in the car with my parents, because they were only living a few blocks away from us at the time. And she had said she was in the car with my parents, she was on her way to the ER, and that Alex had taken it too far. They had gotten in a fight, and he had taken it too far. And she sent me pictures, and it was just, like, it was awful. I mean, it was horrific. It was, you know, it was my worst nightmare. I mean, as far as, like, I just knew that the emotional abuse and the control was going to escalate into physical. And we knew that he had killed one of their cats already. Like, he had actually killed a total of 3 cats in their marriage. And
oh my gosh.
Yeah, it's crazy. And so when he had killed the first cat, for no reason, I mean, from what she told me, that was a huge red flag. I mean, so from that moment on, I was just, and I remember just being, she was pregnant with Alexis at the time, I remember, because I just kept telling her, like, Caitlin, like, you know, what is he going to, if he can kill and torture a cat, you know, what is he going to do when he has a baby? Like, he could kill her, he could kill you, like, you know, people who kill cats kill people. And so I just kept telling her that, and she just really wanted to believe. Like a lot of people who are in abusive situations, you know, she was, just wanted to be loved, and she wanted to believe that he would change, and she thought he would. She wanted to see the good. She, you know, really thought they were young and, you know, made excuses for him. And I kept telling her, like, you're living what I lived through before. Like, I, you know, I know it's hard because I'm your mom, but it's like, this is what's happening, and it doesn't get better, it gets worse. And I would have her friends talk to her, everybody, you know, because I knew that she was just going to push me away and not take, you know, because I'm her mom.
Sure.
I reached out to several people and just said, please talk to her, like, get her out of the situation.
Melanie? We do have a 3-minute break. We will be right back, dear.
Okay.
It starts with you and me. We all can be heroes if we take the lead.
All right. We are back with our guest, Melanie Enzinger, and we are talking about her daughter, Caitlin Rose, and her death, which occurred on August 3rd of last year. And my daughter passed away a year ago today. So we do have commonality, different circumstances, but certainly I can honestly say that I know partially how you feel. But my daughter had a wonderful support system. Her husband is just the most wonderful person. He was supportive and loving and caring. And so she had a totally different experience. And for that, I am incredibly grateful for Chris, my son-in-law, who I love dearly, and for my son, Rich. But you were talking about narcissism, and you mentioned that that Caitlin's husband was jealous, and I think sometimes that might seem like, oh gosh, he loves me so much, he loves me, and that's why he's jealous. And I think that probably, correct me if I'm wrong, but Caitlin probably wanted to see the best in everyone.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. And that's how I raised her. And that's, you know, I went through my life being very naive and too trusting. And she, you know, was doing the same thing. And she just did see the good in everybody. And she saw how people can change. And she went through a lot of stuff in her life as well where she, you know, made a real big comeback and, you know, and just was, learned through her mistakes and was still learning. And so she just kept, you know, she just really wanted me. The more she would tell me, the more I would, you know, as a mom, try to protect her and tell her how I felt. It's like the more bad stuff that would happen, the more, and she would tell me, she would push away. And then it got to where she was like, you know, not telling me stuff. And like whenever they would get in a big fight and she'd come over here, she was like, you know, she didn't want to talk about it because she didn't want to hear my 2 cents. And, you know, and so, you know, she was just, so I had to kind of back off, you know, it got, cause I knew it was really bad. I mean, I knew after that beating in February, just how horrible and what a monster he was. And I would sit down and I talked to him and her about it. And I would tell her, I mean, he's going to end up killing you. I was like, Caitlin, like, you have got to leave. And she would leave him, and then he would just, you know, he would just promise the world to her, and he would tell her all the good things and apologize 1,000 times and reel her back in. And one time they were separated. I mean, she told me she was pregnant. I mean, they were separated. She was living with me, and that's when she got pregnant with the child that she was with when she got murdered. They were separated whenever she got pregnant, and it's like I remember being at the restaurant and her telling me, it was me, her, and her sister eating, and she told me, and I broke down in tears because I knew that was the type of control that he had on her. So I knew by getting her pregnant, he knew she was going to go back to him because she didn't want to be a single mom. She wanted the happy family, and I just broke down and just knew that I was like, so does this mean? I mean, you know, you're gonna take him back. And like my worst fear happened. I mean, she did take him back and warned him and said, Mom, you know, he promised me he's never going to hit me again. And like, you know, and it just was the scariest. I every minute of the day, I would worry about her. I mean, texting her, calling her, and he would take her phone away from her whenever they would fight. He moved her all the way to Pasadena away from where we are in Kingwood. She didn't drive. So he had that kind of control over her. It scared me. I'm like, he's trying to get you as far away from us as possible because he knew we were the ones pushing for her to leave him. And so he isolated her from her friends, from her family, it was just horrible.
I think that's a way that narcissists work. And, here's some noise in the background. Okay, there it went. And I think that that's a way that they work to keep control over their victim. They make all these promises and, they're secretive. And the fact that he moved her away from you, that must have been nightmarish for you, knowing what you know. Oh gosh, what an awful thing. You said that they were together for like a year and a half.
They were, and it moved very fast. I mean, like they were together, they were together, they got tattoos of each other's names, on their arms. I mean, it was so fast. Like that in itself happened, like 2-3 months, maybe like after they started dating. And then it was real fast. And then they were living together real soon on, and just right away she got pregnant. And so, I guess about 6 months into the pregnancy, 6-7 months in the pregnancy, they got married. It was awful. I mean, I just saw, I saw through him, and it was horrible.
We do have a quick 3-minute break. We'll be right back.
Okay.
Music. Alrighty, we are back, and we're talking about narcissism, and it seems like we live in a very narcissistic society where people are just very into themselves, and it's really very unfortunate. It's wonderful that you have people around you that are supportive and that understand your feelings. And that's probably the most important thing that you can have is a support system.
Absolutely.
And now you said that your parents live close by.
They do. They live next door. So,
That's pretty close. That is terrific.
Yeah.
And of course they're very supportive of you. And the things that you're doing, the therapeutic work that you're doing to establish Caitlin's Law, how is that progressing? Are you seeing some progress in that?
We are. We actually are. I mean, I was getting a little bit concerned with COVID. We kind of had a little bit of a pause, for a few months, but we actually are with election and, everything coming up here in January, everything, is really moving along. I've been doing quite a few interviews. We've gotten in touch with, senators and, that are on board with us. I know Senator Betancourt was just, on my interview with, Channel 11, this last Friday. So we're definitely, reaching the people that we need to reach, which is, great. I mean, I've just been very, very, happy about everything right now. And, it's just moving along. And I really appreciate you, having me on. And I haven't been able to say, but I am very, very, very sorry for your loss as well. It's just, it is absolutely, every parent's worst nightmare. Like you said, it is very, very therapeutic. And I've been able to channel my grief into, helping others and hopefully saving lives.
Absolutely.
Yes, and I'm on like domestic abuse, Facebook groups that my daughter was actually, we found out, after this happened, I had no idea, but she was actually a member, they found on her phone of, these domestic abuse groups. So she, you know, was reaching out and talking to others, with her experience. And so I got on some of these groups and I'm just hoping that, you know, her story can, you know, help people to leave their abusers and, you know, and I mean, if it, it's just, if lives can be changed and, you know, her story can be heard and help others. I mean, that's all I ask. That would be very, it's, you know, I know that's what she would want because, the warning signs are there. It's just, there's a lot of codependent people out there. And they just want to be with someone. They want to be loved and they don't want to be alone. And they're putting their lives at risk. These abusers, they don't change. And that's what I think the biggest thing is to make people realize that it does not get better. I mean, it really doesn't. The control and the abuse, it just doesn't get better. And I told Caitlin, it's not even about like, I, you know, wanted her to leave, like after he was arrested, like, you know, I begged her to come home with me. And I said, it's not even like, you know, cause I knew he wouldn't know where she was if she came here, cause that's always where she came. I even, you know, begged her to, you know, go somewhere, like hide, like, cause if he, you know, when and if he does get out, you know, at some point I knew that he was gonna, you know, I was just very fearful that, he was gonna, you know, he was gonna come back to the apartment and there where she was and I feared for her life and then I found out later after she was murdered that she had reached out to, a very good friend of mine, to go to her house to hide from him. So I know that she, I had no idea until after she was murdered that she was reaching out and she was trying to do that. I actually think, and maybe she's kind of made me feel this way, but I feel like she didn't come here because I had Alexis. I had taken her 8-month-old, when he was arrested, I was trying to take, she was pregnant and stressed out. So I tried to take some of the stress off of her and I had Alexis with me. And I think she was trying to protect, you know, not come here because protecting us and her baby. I think she was just, she wanted to stay in her apartment. She felt like she had a plan. She really felt like the system was protecting her because she told me, Mom, he's not getting out. She's like, he's facing, you know, a felony charge and 3 misdemeanors. Like he went, but you know, he's not going to get out of jail. Like he's facing all these charges. Like why in the world would they let him out? That was her exact words. Like I talked to her the Thursday before the Saturday she was murdered and she really, really thought that he was going to stay in jail. Like she did never many years thought he was going to be just, you know, let out the way he was.
Well, anybody would ordinarily think that because as you said, he had misdemeanors plus a felony. Of course you would feel like, wow, I'm safe now. He's locked up. No one can hurt me. And it is wonderful too that she did reach out with social media, that she joined a group. That's one good thing about social media is that you can find people in similar circumstances. And of course she thought she was safe. And he was let out. Where is he now?
He is in jail, Harris County Jail. He is in jail and awaiting trial. We've been told the DA told us it could be up to a year before we go to trial. I think
why?
Well, being it's capital murder charges, that she said that they've seen these capital murder cases like go for years. So she said it's just one of those things like, you know, that we just need to be patient and know that, you know, we're definitely going to trial and that he, you know, they have so much evidence. I mean, she even said, you know, if they took away half of the evidence that we have, he would still be, you know what I'm saying? He would still be found guilty. So, it's just a matter of time. I think COVID too hasn't helped. COVID definitely has postponed everything longer. So she did kind of warn me about it. But they keep in touch with me. They've been really great. Yeah, the DA and they've just been great. I mean, we've met with them a few times, obviously, since this happened, and they keep us kind of in the loop even when things aren't happening. They call us and just say, hey, just let you know everything, you know, nothing's on the docket yet. We're just kind of waiting. I'll let you know if something changes. And so, so it's, you know, it's just a waiting game. You know, so, but I, you know, it's just, he's already gotten another felony. I mean, while in prison,
Oh, really?
Oh yeah, like he tried to kill an inmate and they found 2 shanks in his prison cell. So he's got that also.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
What could have made him into such a monster?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, he was so good. You know what I'm saying? Turning off, you know, and turning back on. Like, we saw that part of him, that side of him. Like, he could change in an instant. And it's like he would be the nicest person, you know, and just, reel people in and cry to me. And, you know, he just put a really good act on. He was very manipulative. My parents saw it way before I did. My stepdad just immediately was like, something's not right with him. Like, he's not, like, something is just not right. Like, he really became really close with my other daughter, Madison. And my stepdad didn't trust him at all. He just did not trust him. And at first, you know, I wanted to see the good in him, and I was really trying to be supportive of my daughter. But then it just got worse and worse very quickly. And I knew it was a recipe, for disaster. I told her he was going to, you know, kill her. And I was like, if you don't leave him, what is it going to take him killing you? Like, he's going to kill you, Caitlin. And I just remember saying that so many times to her. And then it's like, it happened, and you never really think, you don't, like, I was living, and I remember saying these words. I remember when it happened, it was like slow motion and so surreal. Wow. I felt like we were just in one of those true crime, like we were in that Dateline story. We were in that, you know, it never happens to us. Like, you know, we never think it's going to really happen.
Of course not.
And she was real into true crime. Like, she got me into true crime. And so we used to always watch, you know, like these YouTube things and I kind of felt like because she watched those things so much, I prayed to God that she would see these people's stories and relate them to hers and get out. Like, that's what I really kind of hoped. And then, our nightmare happened, and it, you know, really happened. And it's not just the grieving of the loss. It's, I have nightmares and, you know, true PTSD from the trauma of how she was murdered. It's like, that's what I lay in bed at night, and that's what haunts me. It's like, you know, like, I know she's here with me, and I know she is happy and just pushing me along and proud of me for everything, but it's just the way. It's the way she, you know, she, it had to happen. It was a very, it's been hard. That's the part it haunts me.
Now, do you have somebody that you can talk to for your PTSD?
I do. I do. I am talking to someone, it's gotten better. It's definitely gotten better. I'm able, you know, to kind of change, you know, like the whatever environment. If I'm, you know, I've learned how to kind of get out of my thoughts. I'm a woman of faith, and just praying and just having, you know, someone to call at all times. It has helped tremendously.
Indeed. Now, was this person, I don't even want to say his name, was he a drug user?
He was, okay, from what I've been told, I know he did have an alcohol problem. I know he had an alcohol problem. I mean, I witnessed that firsthand. But I know he used to do drugs. I mean, that's what I've been told. This is just stuff I've never witnessed him do drugs. But before he met my daughter, I've been told after the murder that he did used to do drugs. Now, I don't know, I don't know if he was possibly on drugs or under the influence when this happened. But I do know that, in the past, some of the abuse that, I knew about was when he was drinking. And so that's why we actually, we made it a kind of a rule. Like, I sat him and her down, he wasn't supposed to be drinking. Like, you know, because I mean, that was kind of like one of the times that he beat her up so badly. Like, he kind of said he didn't, like, he kind of used the excuse that he didn't remember because he was drunk. So we actually, I told him, like, well, you can never drink again. If that's what happens, like, you know, you can never drink again. Like, you're, so I don't know if he was drinking, because I know that he had stopped drinking. Towards the end, at least that's what he was supposed to be doing. I don't know. I have no idea if he was drunk or not. I know, I know for certain that there was times, like, when he killed that first cat that we knew about, my daughter said he wasn't drinking. Like, he wasn't under the influence. He wasn't even mad. She was like, it just happened out of nowhere. So, because I asked her, like, what in the world would make him do such a horrific thing? And she's like, Mom, it was like nothing. Like, she was like, we were like having a normal day. I walked out the bedroom and heard the cat squeal and walked in and he smashed its face in and killed it.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So I think he's a very sick individual. He's a monster. So, I think that he just used the drinking as an excuse. I think he was a very sick person in the head and, had some major things going on there. And I don't know. I don't know, what would make someone, you know, just so sick, but he was a very sick individual and very good.
Evil. Very evil. Absolutely. Sick is when something you can't help. Did you ever meet his parents or his family?
Yes, actually, spent part of the Thanksgiving with them just, you know, that year and we were acquaintances, it's just that they were different than we were, in the aspect of, you know, they have a different culture and Caitlin would tell me, you know, like they kind of, you know, but didn't really have bad things to say about them, but it was just, they were quieter, like, you know, his mom's quieter than I am. I'm kind of real outspoken and loud and, you know, but they were very, I mean, I thought they were, you know, nice and, you know, I didn't know them very well. I just knew what Caitlin would tell me. And so I at the time I didn't have anything negative to say about them. I can say, we know for certain that the abuse was happening in their home when Caitlin and Alex lived there. The abuse that when he beat her to a pulp, and she was actually, you know, in February when she went to the ER, we actually found out she was pregnant. She found out that night when she went to the ER, she was pregnant, but then lost the baby a week later. And so, we know it was because of the abuse. He sat on top of her, you know, and strangled her and so that was her second pregnancy, you know, that miscarried. And that happened, that abuse, I can say, we have an open custody case, so I can't want to say a whole lot, but I can tell you, this has already been brought up in court, is they were living. I mean, Caitlin and Alex, when this beating happened, it happened in their parents' home, and they didn't call the cops.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, we are the ones that had to go. My parents went and picked her up and brought her to the ER. I mean, and then my daughter later told me that this wasn't the first time that he was like, this was happening almost on a weekend, every weekend, and he was beating her up and they would just basically go put her in another room and tell her to go to sleep. Like they would separate.
Oh my gosh.
So the abuse was happening, under their roof and they never called the cops and, it was just absolutely horrible.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Yeah, and it gets worse. I mean, it's not just that. I mean, since the murder happened, you know, they've never once called me. Immediately got a lawyer and started fighting me for custody of Alexis.
You're kidding.
Oh no, I've got temporary right now, but I mean, it's still a very big custody case and they never called to check on Alexis, never called me to nothing. I mean, it's been, just horrible. And then what's really bad is and this is a big deal to me. We brought it up in court. They, you know, we found that Caitlin and Alex were driving my vehicle. I had sold them my vehicle. They had yet to put it in their name, but they had my truck. And so we got the truck back after the murder and we found a pawn receipt in the truck. And the pawn receipt was actually a receipt where he pawned Caitlin's wedding ring just hours before he murdered her.
Oh my gosh. So it was premeditated.
Yes, absolutely. And he actually, he didn't pay for the ring. My daughter paid for everything. I mean, he didn't work. She supported them. I think he worked like a total of a week all the time they were together. And so he pawned the ring that my daughter paid for. So we went to the pawn shop to go get the ring out and they said that the dad had already went and got the ring.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, so I was very upset about that. I told the DA and they actually talked to the defense because I didn't feel like it was their right. It was my daughter's ring.
Exactly.
I wanted to have it to give to Alexis one day. And so they won't give up their ring. They still have the ring.
Wow.
Yeah.
We will be right back. We are back. What can people do to help you?
Oh, absolutely. We can use all the help by just people going to we have CaitlinsLaw.org. We also have a Facebook page, Caitlin's Law. Just to, really just getting the story out there. You know, showing their support with the social media. We're posting everything and keeping everybody up to date with everything on there. And, I mean, it's really just spreading their story. And hopefully, you know, like I said, it reaches legislature and, Caitlin's Law will be passed. I mean, the more people that know the story, you know, the more we, the faster and, you know, the more it will get to legislature. I think that would just be awesome.
Okay. Knowing my daughter and her character and the way that, that she responded to people, she started a book club in her neighborhood and a scripture reading, club. She was just the most loving, kind person. And I really feel that our daughters are together and that my daughter is embracing your daughter.
Oh, thank you. I hope so because if she'd like to read, my daughter was an avid reader. She wanted to have a library in her home. I mean, she collected books and loved to read. Every time you would look at her, she would have a book in her hand. I mean, she always was reading, so that's great. I mean, that they definitely have that in common.
Yes, my daughter read. She was a great reader. In fact, she learned speed reading when both of my children learned speed reading. And so I really believe that they are together now. And it's just, and with the little cat too. Because
yeah.
With the cats, my daughter had pets and she was very devoted to her pets and just loved them. And we always had pets in the family. So I think they're all together. And I think that your daughter's not experiencing that pain, pain, and the fear. She must have been in fear most of the time.
Absolutely. Yeah. I do believe that, you know, she was taken from that and we realized it was bad, but, you know, after the murder, we found things out that, you know, it was so much worse than what we realized. Obviously it was, and I know she had to be in fear. It's so sad, but I know she's in a much better place now. And like, I know that she's happy and she's guiding me, and pushing me and just watching over her baby. I know that Alexa sees her. I just know she does. I mean,
oh, she does. Of course she does.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. After Rebecca transitioned, I know that her dog saw her. I know him, that she did. Gracie, I know Gracie saw her.
Aww.
So it's an amazing thing that they're with us. We just can't see them because they're in a different environment, but
absolutely,
they're still with us. They're still with us. Melanie, thank you so much for sharing this very painful story and for, we have this commonality. I know how you feel, not quite because of the different circumstances, but my heart goes out to you and my love to you also.
Thank you. You as well. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
All right. Stay with us. We will be right back.